by Wednesday, we should be at the Vatican. So I think it would probably help if you brought your Vatican, if you read your Vatican until Wednesday and read until Friday, yeah? Because we're going to treat them together pretty much, Vatican and read on Wednesday and Friday. But first on Friday, we will have a question and answer session. Now last time, I tried to show you the steps of rebellion or cultural revolt against bourgeois society. Impressionism, and then what we could call dandyism. And we were coming to the most important of all, namely expressionism. Now, as a matter of fact, and I think I'd better make that clear, there is a national component to this. Impressionism is French. By and large, the dandies are English. And expressionism and futurism are German and Italian. Now, why that should be is almost impossible to say. It isn't quite that exclusive, but why that should be is very difficult to say, and I can hardly speculate about it. Except, of course, that Impressionism came first, and that in French art and literature there is a kind of tradition of sense impression, which you don't have in Germany. One used to lecture years ago of Debussy versus Wagner, which one tried to put some of the difference of French and Germany is Debussy versus Wagner. Debussy, who is of course an impressionist composer, a lot of sense perception, delicate sense perception, and Wagner, who of course quite differently, like the expressionists in this case, comes deeply from the soul. As for the dandy, perhaps this individual sexual rebellion in England is so very deep because perhaps of the greater tolerance in England for eccentrics, which made Oscar Wilde accepted where no equivalent Oscar Wilde would probably have been accepted in Germany or anywhere else for that matter. The greater individualism, but these are all speculations. You really can't tell. But however that may be, Impressionism in France and dandyism, all this, homosexual rebellion, children of the sun, are in a way passive, personal, narcissistic. And perhaps it has to do something with the greater personal individual tradition in France and England rather than in Germany. But the trouble with that is that futurism in Italy had that too. And yet Italy went in for a very violent rebellion and not for impressionism and dandyism at all. So it isn't so easy to explain. Now, expressionism is a German phenomena, to be sure, and through, as you will say, futurism, an Italian phenomena. Some of it came to France and England, but relatively little, and it becomes a much more total rebellion. And as far as that goes, in a sense, a much more important rebellion. You can perhaps say one final general thing, all very speculative. Because expressionism was a German phenomenon, and futurism an Italian phenomenon, you can say that the payoff came after 1918, when French France rapidly becomes an intellectual backwater, and the really exciting intellectual progress is very largely in Germany, and to some extent in Italy, but very largely in Germany in the 1920s, has perhaps something to do with the relative violence and totality of this rebellion in Germany, where in France and England that rebellion was passive and partial. Impressionism didn't have much of a future in a sense, and Dandyism did have a future, but with Auden and Isherwood and those people, I would have said a rather limited future in England. This is not true for expressionism. Now, as I said last time, expressionism is the name given, coined in 1910, in order to describe young artists who seceded from the official German art exhibition, made their own exhibition, and the exhibition was an art which was forever in movement. As Ludwig Kirchner, the best known perhaps of the German expressionist artists or painters, put it, grasping everything while it is in motion. The restlessness is essential here, and it is not, let us say, for the dandies so much, or even for the impressionists on a refined level. Nothing refined about expressionists. And that this restlessness was typical of a young generation which wanted above all to escape the age of respectability, of settled social structures, in short, which refused to integrate itself with the lifestyle of the bourgeoisie, and which followed out something Nietzsche was going to say later, namely that a settled society puts you to sleep. There is, as you will see in a minute, the element of boredom, which you don't find in France and England at all, to the same degree as in Germany, for example. In 1914, as I told you, three quarters of the expressionists were below 30 years of age. It was a youth movement, of adolescents, that is, people in their 20s. Never mind. Expressionism is, however, not just some people who are trying to find each other, and you're all trying to find yourself, that's a great thing. Yeah, God knows where. Anyhow, the question is, however that may be, expressionism isn't just an artistic movement. It is, as one of them put it, an attitude of mind. It is a totality. It is not just a revolt against what we might call Wilhelmian German culture, like Impressionism is an artistic revolt against French bourgeois culture. But this is indeed a revolt of youth, a battle of generation. And this, I think, is very crucial. The emphasis on youth, the emphasis on a movement is very crucial. By and large, Expressionism repudiated history, the past, and try to live in the present. That is, of course, true for Impressionism. It's true for Oscar Wilde, because, after all, the elders always were connected with the past. The tribals, which like to have antique furniture to a certain extent, yes? And these young people tried to cut themselves off from the past. The past to them was despised, but they despised also the present. And if you despise the past, present, they hurried, as it were, from one experience to another. And I say experience, not sense impression. The French hurried from one sense impression to another. That's very refined. That's not violent. There's nothing violent about the impression. There's nothing violent about DBC, right? Yes, well, I don't think the French can write music. I think only the Germans can write music, but that's my own prejudice. You like Wagner, you don't like anyone. So, what comes, however, out of that is the sense impression, the fine sense impression. But for the young expressionists, that didn't come. They wanted experience. Here they were a little like the dandies, except they didn't actually do it, as we should. See, they wanted one experience after another. And these experiences were focused for them in the war between generations. The war of young against old, vigorous against tired, and to them it was the war of sons against father. For the expressionist youth, the aim was freedom. Freedom to have experience. Freedom to find themselves. And that freedom meant murdering their fathers. Why not their mothers? Because the mothers, in a way, were not the ones in that bourgeois society who had the final say. The final say about careers and so on, that was up to the father and not the mother. And so it was the father who was attacked as the symbol. Because even in the tribals, remember, the final say is Mr. Tribe. She has to manage it, she has to manipulate it. But in bourgeois society, the woman is the manipulator. But the final say is the father. Well, but does that surprise you? Whenever I have student parents in my office, it's still the same. The mother is the manipulator, but the final say is the father. Yes? She talks, she always looks to the father, she is loquacious, he is small and pale and says nothing, but the last thing he says, no, my daughter isn't going to marry that boy, and that's it. Anyway, however that might be, it should be familiar to all of you as well. Now, all of this war was a brutal war. The most famous German expressionist collection of expressionist poems collected by a man called Pintus, if you're interested, called The Dawn, called The Dawn of Humanity, Menschheit im Dämmerung, in 1920. This famous collection by Pintus looks back at the expressionist revolt and describes it quite correctly, as a battle against reality. Those horrible awakenings, which at one and the same time destroy the world and create a new world. And that describes it very well. The expressionist wanted to destroy the world, to murder the father, and to create a new world, though they were quite vague, as we shall see, what this new world would be. But what you have in Pintus is the violence. The violence which goes into art, into painting, and a violence which goes into their writing. A violence of language and vocabulary. Expressionist writing is staccato, one exclamation after another. Extremely brutal and immediate, because again, it was a matter of immediacy. How was the battle executed? The battle was executed by murdering the father. And as these were bourgeois youths, it was executed on the stage. There came to be a whole rash of famous plays, all called Pater, the murder of the father. The most brutal one is by Arnold Bronner. And very typically, Arnold Bronner, from this brutal drama, in the end, became a kind of Nazi, but the Nazis didn't know what to do with him either. The state certainly didn't want to kill any fathers. And so he was even under the Nazis, he didn't amount to much. And eventually he became a communist, and then he died. But all these expressionists are going to look for settled framework. As you will see, the attraction of Nazism and expressionism was huge. But for the expressionists, and of course the famous expressionists became Nazis for a while. It was the longing for form. They wanted to kill the father, but hell, they needed one, because their vision was so unformed. They didn't really know what that new society was. So very typical, it can be said for all of you too, I'm sure, they were against settled structures, but they really wanted them like hell. They were against fathers. They wanted to kill the father, but they really wanted it. You know, that is, of course, very typical. Arnold Bronner's play, Vatermord, Father Murder of 1920, has everything you want. It has the symbols, keys, locked doors, beating, homosexuality, lesbianism, torture. And typically enough, in this drama with his father tyrannizing a son, locking him up in the room, throwing away the key, all that sort of thing. In the end, the end is freedom, and freedom is defined as license. What is freedom in Broughton's drama? Freedom is for the son to have incest with his mother, to have homosexuality with his friends, to do, in fact, whatever experience he wants. That is freedom. Freedom is license. It is, in fact, access. The most important of all of these plays, however, is not Broughton's Father Murder, but Houghton Claver's The Son of 1917. For here, in Houghton Claver's play, the son defines freedom as what? As ecstasy. He says, one only lives if one can live constantly in ecstasy. Reality is embarrassed. Only ecstasy comes. Reality is embarrassed. And so you must be free to have one experience after another. The father, in Houghton Claver's play, has no sense what is great. He doesn't want experience. He wants to have no experience. He wants the routine of life. He has no idea what is a great experience or great sacrifice. I'll come back to that. That was written during the war. Experience, sacrifice. And the accusation against the father then is that the father in fact ignores anything great. As the son puts it, one lives only in ecstasy. Reality is indeed embarrassing. One must live in order to realize that oneself is the most important thing in the world. Like in dandyism, in this revolt there is a great deal of narcissism, that is, individualism of that sort. We must take all opportunities. Death to the father who despises us. Let us have the courage to brutalize ourselves and the world. For the last experience was the experience of brutality. And many of their dramas and plays, and their art, is the art of brutality. My favorite line, difficult to translate, comes from an expressionist play about 1915 by Casimir Etchmid, who is one of the pioneers of German expressionist prose. It is about a tyrant called Timur, a Greek tyrant, and has a famous line which in German runs, "Die Schlachten stundenlang des Abends," they slaughter for hours in the evening. And so in the play, skull after skull until you have a huge mountain. In other words, there is in this a love of brutality, which is of course the revolt against manners and morals, a rejoicing in war, a virtue, see, a rejoicing in war and death to the father. What they accept, therefore, is speed. In a way you can put one experience after another, it's the speed of time. And the painter whom I think myself is the best of these painters, Emil Nolde. Emil Nolde, in his paintings, tries to capture, through the use of color, this frantic activity, the great experience, the speed of time. Emil Nolde's idea was to paint without thinking beforehand, to capture your experiences on the canvas. And therefore, expressionist art was abstract art. It was the art of the soul. It was to paint before thinking. It was to paint out of your soul. No wonder the Nazis liked it. To paint out of your soul one experience after the other. Violence. Now you will understand all this still better if we go for a minute to really the founder of German Expressionism, of the whole Expressionist movement, Georg Haydn. Now, Georg Haydn left a diary in which he tells us why all of this, and his inmost feelings. In 1910, in the very year when Expressionism began, he wrote in his diaries as follows, his usual complaint, how boring life is. One of the wellsprings of this entire revolt is boredom. The boredom was bourgeois society. The boredom was bourgeois opulence. The bourgeois manners and morals. Now that is nothing unusual. It's the Hell's Angels today. It's the counterculture today. It's all of that sort of thing which you have today. For bourgeois youth, the wellspring is boredom. Boy, how nice when in our student riot you had something to do in the afternoon. You could go to processions to the state capital. So, in other words, boredom is very important, not to be underestimated. The fathers are boring. Society is boring. And it is out of this feeling, I think, more than anything else, out of the perceived boredom, that this revolt actually comes. There is never anything like a social analysis. And that doesn't exist for the expressionist, for the impressionist, for the dandy. There is no social analysis, no economic analysis. There is immediate action out of a feeling of terrific boredom, after all. Boredom that goes on. In 1907, Heim writes as follows. If war broke out, I would be happy. Now one day is like the next. No great joy and no great pain. Everything is so boring. And here you see that longing for the great experience, which is very romantic. In your life, you must have a great sorrow, a great pain, or a great joy. That is German romanticism is reflected here. Otherwise, life is very boring. And after all, how can you have a friend who has no great sorrow, no great pain? If he has no great sorrow, no great pain, he hasn't got a soul. He's boring. Yes? You can see the idea, no? Very clearly. In 1910 he again writes, if only something would happen, if only barricades could be erected in the streets, I would go on the barricades. And that would be the end to boredom as well. Now, what is important here is clear. By the way, Heim did not live to see the outbreak of the war in 1914 and to greet it with great joy. He died earlier of tuberculosis, a disease to which I shall return later. Now, the trend is clear here. What is wanted is experience, the great joy of suffering. And what is vital here is the kind of dialectic which grows out of this boredom. Joy and pain, life and death, decay and renewal. In other words, you don't just want joy, that's boring. You want joy and pain. The expressionists in their art always thought dialectically in their place. You want joy and pain in all of this. The result, of course, is clear, I think. Expressionist thought has a chaotic cast, and it does not shy from war and destruction. It is filled with passionate descriptions of blood, brutality, and decay. That is clear. They call for Bürgermord. Kill the bourgeois. Murder the bourgeois. That is their constant cry. Murder and kill. As Heim again says in the one play he wrote, Heaven and Hell. You see again the dialectic. Heaven and hell, he said, the mere sight of a bourgeois type is enough for me to kill him. So, in other words, this is the idea always, the call for war, the call for blood, the brutality, the call for the extraordinary, the worship of speed is very important in expressionism and futurism. And therefore, to a very large degree, by the way, the acceptance of the new technology which we talked about. Now I think it is clear to give you enough said to give you an idea of this class war. But the problem with the class war that it was more theoretical than practical. After all, George Orwell was right in a way when he described these youth movements, that it was a search for adventure, for unconventionality, who, on the type of youth who never experienced hunger, hardship, solitude, exile, war, prison, persecution, or manual work. That's, of course, quite true. But the end of how the claimant father wanted is very difficult. In the end, the son goes down to kill the father with a loaded pistol. And he comes to the father's room and he says, "Father, I'm going to kill you. Now comes the time. I've had enough. I want my freedom." And he puts the loaded pistol on the father's breast. The father dies of a heart attack. The ideal bourgeois revolution. So, what you have here then is a kind of a play within a play. I don't care what people say, a play within a play. This is the Nazi revolution. Hasn't Kleber described fascism better than anybody else? You put a loaded pistol, but it dies of a heart attack. It's excellent. You have a revolution without violence. You have a revolution without disturbance. The kind of revolution you all want. So that's the revolution of bourgeois children. But don't tell me that. In the middle of our riots, you know, after one kid attacked me at some length, he came after me, a leader of the Wisconsin Revolution, and said, "I hope you don't resign over there." I said, "Have you ever heard that the revolution goes over board?" In other words, all the bourgeois revolutions are played within a play, and their results can be cultural excellence and excellent theory, but we mustn't kid ourselves. It ain't revolution. Sure, what we have therefore is this cultural revolution. Anyway, never a revolution to begin with, a real revolution. And this cultural revolution on the part of naughty children, to a certain extent, that's of course true. Now, but the problem is also clear here, the serious problem, that in a sense, the dialectic, how is it going to be fulfilled? Their only program for the future was put by Casimir Eschmidt, where the horror of death has been most shattering. There we will find life. But that is rhetoric. That isn't a plan for a future society. And indeed, they greeted the First World War with a great deal of pleasure and delight. Indeed, in much of their poetry, war became the creator of all things, the destroyer of bourgeois society. The revolution come true, the awakening of youth as youth marches into the war. And by the way, that is, and I might say that now, why the Italian futurist, to whom I will come in a minute, supported Italian intervention in the war. That is why the futurists led intervention. Because they believed that youth marching off onto the war to death and destruction would create new life. The bourgeois order would tumble. But tumble for what? Was of course far from unclear. Very far from clear. Now the result of this lack of clarity was what? There was a great deal of talk about the new man. It's true for fascism too. That's true for all of these theories, which really don't know what the future state will be. So if you don't know what you will have, you'll talk about the new man. The new man that will come out and will transform everything. And there was an expressionist new man. He was flaming youth. A youth who had every experience, from incest to everything. What you can imagine. Of course, also political experience, every experience, one experience after another, and he would emerge, of course, hardened as steel. In a sense, you end up with the Nietzschean man, hard as steel, ruthless and brutal, loving blood and strife, so that he knew world emergence. Clearly, he was an activist. Clearly he was narcissistic, freedom was a personal. As Harvey Claver put it once, we must have the power to brutalize our ego. Now, that is not, as we would say, a blueprint for the future. That isn't what we just say. So what happened to this expression? What was the consequence of this revolution? Well, I think there are three consequences, all of vast importance. First of all, it produced one of the most important cultural creativity, both in art, expressionist literature, and a frontal attack on bourgeois society, and a frontal attack on bourgeois manners and morals, as an artistic statement of the longing for immediacy. Because again, you must put that in what I said about railway travel. All this longing for experience, is a longing for immediacy. You don't want to wait. You want instant gratification. And your father must not get in the way of your instant gratification, or you will kill him. Because what is important is the instant, the immediate gratification. So what you have is, of course, here, the literature of the world, the father world, father murders, as excellent explained some way, the novels of revolt and the paintings of revolt, which are abstract art, chaotic art, the chaos of the soul, beginning of a whole new artistic movement, as we shall see. Secondly, obviously, all the expressionists would eventually, in the war, come to face with reality. And they didn't like it. They didn't like it because it's all very well to write things about brutality. But you spent 4 years in the trenches. Yeah? That isn't the father murder more. That is your own murder. Yeah? So they came face to face with reality of the war, and the enthusiasm evaporated. You can imagine. You got trench foot. These were shot at you. And all of them. And so, very important expressionists moved away, and they moved to something else, which will be of great importance. They began to exalt not brutality, but camaraderie. Because to these people, these bourgeois youths, the great experience was the camaraderie in the trenches. Don't look to me, your ancestors, when we had the big cities here, yes? They loved the cities, because the bourgeois youths from Scarsdale or Fox Point, they want camaraderie. There they were all together in the administration building, yeah? And they had experiences together, and they sat together for 4 days, and they came and told me, really didn't care what it was about, but I loved the camaraderie. So they loved the camaraderie, these bourgeois kids. They were suddenly with working classes, and they had what every bourgeois kid wants, a working class friend to come and get you. So, they had this kind of camaraderie, you see. They thought they were integrated. They loved it. They had this longing for the working classes, which is so expressed here. Yes, well, never mind. But their longing of camaraderie did not abandon the expressionist idea of individualism, of experience. And so, what they actually did in their second ideal, they, as it were, strengthened an ideal of camaraderie which came out of the war as a kind of individualistic socialism. And the people who came from expressionists and came to this kind of socialism, this new kind of socialism, we shall come back to. Young man called Rubina, but the most famous one I will give you now too, but we should come back to that, of course, because it is the great socialist alternative, Toller. These people in Germany, above all, found a camaraderie which could be equality without giving up their individualism. And so, in the end, people like Toller When we talk about the Bavarian Revolution of 1918, somebody who led it, like Eichner, who was an expressionist poet, they believed, therefore, in a socialist alternative to Bolshevism and communism and social democracy, which becomes extremely important. And which is the alternative which you think of when you think of Weimar Germany almost immediately, namely socialism as a camaraderie of affinity in which nobody gives up his individualism, where the great experiences come in common, and which they combine now with pacifism. One of them began to write a very famous play called Those Without Power. Those without power will win. They changed their mind about it. And so, in a way, they began to integrate themselves into an ideal of camaraderie, which becomes a new kind of socialism, to which we shall come back later, but which I must mention now, a socialist alternative. The socialism of the intellectual, which became the socialism of the intellectuals against the dictatorship of Bolshevism or the Communist Party and the bourgeois nature of social democracy. It became the alternative and the direct ancestor of what we call today the New Left. The direct ancestor of the New Left is here, in fact, in the socialist alternative. But thirdly, others went to the right, to fascism and national socialism, and these were the more distinguished, by and large. The more famous case is the greatest German poet of the 20th century, Ben. And there is a, or if you could want to call Ezra Pound an expressionist, you can. Certain ways. The reason these people like Ben or Powell, Yeats, great poets, writers, the greatest, became fascists is very simple. Because they wanted direction. They longed for a direction. Because expressionism, as I said, is vague. It doesn't give you a direction. They wanted discipline. They really wanted the father. And the new father, in the end, his name was Hitler or Mussolini. And then, though they could not accept their personal father, they could accept the father of us all, Hitler or Mussolini, was a different matter. Because it gave them direction. And not only did it give them direction, it integrated them with the people. Because through fascism, they also, in a way, could be part of a modern mass movement. They could have worker friends, so they thought. At any rate, through the party, they could have a link with the people, through the party. Now, the interesting thing is this, that none of these expressionists could stick. They didn't have enough discipline. So Gottfried Benn was a Nazi, perhaps for half a year. Then he quit. They didn't have the discipline, of course. These were temporary solutions. There were no solutions in the end for the expression. Similarly, of course, the Nazis were attracted to expressionists, the chaos of the soul, especially Nazi student organization, put on expressionist exhibits until Hitler put an end to it. Hitler himself in 1934 had to put an end for the enthusiasm among young Nazis for expressionist art and literature. Because it is the chaos of the soul. It is, as it were, an expression of the inmost being. It is the quest for experience. And so I would say expressionism foreshadows what is to come. Foreshadows, in a way, a much larger revolt, in the end, the fascist revolt, and the futurism to which I'll come in a minute directly, because the futurists were the allies of Mussolini. And the expressionists never really were the allies of Hitler himself. To summarize then, I would say this, that the expressionist movement with its important cultural consequences. Because it was such a chaotic revolution, was extremely important as a prototype, in a way, of the will to catastrophe, a prototype of the bourgeois revolution. A prototype which was full of inner contradictions, the dialectic of death and hope and all of it. And another contradiction which I should mention, because Brecht comes out of this after all, the contradiction between his intense individualism and typology. In their plays, it's a typology. It's never the individual, it's always the son, the Chinese, the sailor, the bourgeois. In other words, in a way, though they were intensely individual, they thought in types. They wanted to kill the bourgeois. They put on the stage the you. There is this longing, if you like, for camaraderie, which goes into this kind of typology, which finds its expression in the kind of socialism I talked about. But there is a contradiction here. The new man of expressionism was in a way a type. And that, of course, is continued over Bertolt Brecht's early expressionist plays. Remember, Brecht was an expressionist into his communist play. The very easy line from expressionism and communism. Out of the Chinese, you make the capitalist, yes? And it's all the same. And it is, in my opinion, very dimensional. I am not a fresh admirer, for this I shall be shot immediately after class. But however that might be, what you have here is clear. You have a contradiction here among this very violent youth. The stereotype and the individual. You have it in art too, of the greatest cartoonist, Georg Ross, to my comeback. Paints in types, not in the chaos of the sword. But in the end, you have that expressionism going three ways. The cultural way, the way of socialism, the powerless, the camaraderie through the war. They found their way into a community, not of force, but of affinity. In a community, all men are brothers. In the end, Hasenclever writes a play where the father is no longer murdered, but all men become brothers, as it were. He believes in humanity, in camaraderie, however vague, which becomes, if you like, a kind of socialism. And thirdly, expressionism foreshadows, in a way. The bourgeois revolt, which will be the revolt of our century. The only successful revolt that has ever been in Europe is a bourgeois revolt, the fascist revolt. So, as the fascist revolt is a play within a play, the revolt of bourgeois children against bourgeois elders, as that was the youth movement, it foreshadows it with some people. But not really in Germany that closely, because the expressionists who became Nazis didn't stick it. They couldn't stomach racism, they couldn't stomach discipline. They left it very suddenly. They were chaotic. Their god was not Hitler, really, but in the end their god was Nietzsche, once Nietzsche had started writing and became more well-known. The difference between expressionism and Italian futurism is this. That Italian futurism became what expressionism never became, a political movement, and an important political. There is a second difference between expressionism and futurism, and it is again one of these national differences, you know, so difficult to get hold of, between Germany and Italy. The futurists were obsessed with technology, the sports car, the train, the aeroplane. And they were less interested in chaos of the sort. They were bored too, and out of boredom they wanted to attack their father, and the manners and morals and lifestyle of the Italian equivalent of the tribe. They too wanted to attack that, of course, the equivalent lifestyle of the tribe. But they did it by jumping in a motor car, and not by having a chaos of its own. And the reason for that is that Italy never had a real romanticism as the German romanticism. After all, expressionism has a good result of German romanticism. The great experience, the great sorrow, the great pain. I mean, after all, like the romantic, you can picture expressionist youth sitting down and together, like you two sitting down together and saying to each other, what is your great sorrow? Your great pain. But the answer is obviously, my great sorrow is my father. And then you think, how will you kill your father? So, you can say this, but you can't see it with the futurists. They would have no patience for it. They would say, rather than talk about it, for goodness sake, do it. And they would do it. They would not just put the pistol on the breast and let the father die of a heart attack. And they would want to do it. But there's another great difference between the expressionists and the Italians. The Italian futurists are patriotic. The expressionists are not. And the reason for that is simple. That in Germany, the bourgeois was so patriotic in the new empire. And in Italy, the whole process of national unification was different. Italian nationalism is a nationalism which is universal. Italy was unified as a nation on the way to humanity. Germany was unified as a nation, period. So obviously, for the futurists, nationalism was against the Italian bourgeois. But in Germany, it's just the opposite. The German bourgeois was patriotic, like the tribals, and therefore the children were unpatriotic. They wanted war, but not for patriotic reasons, and the way out of borders. But the Italian Jews wanted war for patriotic reasons, because their fathers were not patriotic. They'd grown up in the time of Italian unification, and in Italian unification, there was talk about Italy, but there was always talk about humanity. There was always talk about Mazzini and others of Italy as a state of humanity. And therefore, Italian futurism never found their way back to humanity, like the German expressionists do. Because humanity was too much bound up with their past. It was too much of the 18th century in the Italian bourgeoisie against the rebel. So that the futurists had it easy. They found a framework in patriotism, and an extreme patriotism which their fathers did not share. Well, as I have said, in Germany, it is just the other way around. The fathers had the patriotism, so the sons lacked it. And yet, in both futurism and expressionism, the basic revolt is the same. It is a stronger revolt than impressionism or the dandy. The futurists are, in fact, in a way, expressionists in their brutality, in their violence. And it is a revolt that comes out of boredom, out of boredom. And that combines, in a way, love for technology, which dandyism. The futurists also dress peculiarly in their studs and all of that sort of thing. But their obsession was not just experience, not sexual experience at all, as it was for the expressionism. There was speed. Their painting is the first modern speed painting, automatic painting, they call it. Is speed painting. See, automatic painting, their idea is the sports. For the Futurist Manifesto, the Futurist Manifesto combines two things, three things. Speed, patriotism, and pragmatism. And that is different in Germany. The expressionists, the combined experiences and their soul, but not in a way speed, patriotism, and pragmatism. No, it so happens that what I'll do on Wednesday is I'll say another few things about futurism, and then I will come to this. So please have your mind again by Wednesday.